check Organized Chaos, an ESPN podcast hosted by former NFL coach Rex Ryan and his former Jets and Ravens linebacker Bart Scott. The duo will be reunited in this weekly podcast with new episodes every Monday that will provide listeners with expert insight and analysis on everything happening around the league, featuring trending stories from on and off the field. That's Organized Chaos. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome in the latest Daily Wager Extra podcast. We are taping this on Sunday night. Also known as the sentimental return night. Of course, we're all talking about Antonio Brown's return to Foxborough. Also, Andy Reid's return to Philadelphia. And oh, by the way, Tom Brady's as well. I'm Doug Kazarian, joined again this Sunday night with Mackenzie Kramer, who's rocking the Jets jersey on the Zoom. Wow. Bold. Bold strategy, Cotton.
Well, it's the first time the Jets actually won a game that I wanted them to win in nearly 2 years. So I'm not used to actually being happy on an NFL Sunday, but I had my best betting week of the year. The Jets won. I thought you were talking about Randy Bullock's return to MetLife Stadium to face the Jets and miss a field goal in overtime. But yeah, I guess Tom Brady came back too.
There were so many stupid subplot references we could make in a day and age in sports where we do see player movement more than we ever have. But yes, epic game just finished up as we are taping this. And I'll tell you what, man, this morning, bright and early, 6 a.m. local time, we had Sal Pal on the show talking about how he didn't say it. He said it goes, I don't know the game plan per se, but typically with weather like this, Belichick's going to want to dare Tampa to run. He had a roster move where there was an extra corner, so they're going to see a lot of nickels and dimes, and it was just going to be kind of a grinded out game. So I ended up, you know, just before kickoff, needed some action. I went with the under. I was already on a bunch of teasers, but excuse me, it played out perfectly as I would imagine Belichick wanted. Just the doink off the upright was not what he envisioned.
Yeah, I feel like I was the only person in the gambling world who didn't actually have money on this game. Caesars released a statement about 20 minutes before game time that the handle on this game was more than triple any other game they had this season, other than the opening Thursday night, which obviously you have all year to prepare for that game. So it makes sense that that might be number one. I didn't get the final numbers if this was the most heavily bet on game all year. But to your point about Tom Brady and the under, I mean, Brady, 51% completion percentage is worse for the Bucs. A third of his passes were off target, his worst for Tampa Bay. And he didn't throw a touchdown pass, though. Antonio Brown probably should have caught that one in the back of the end zone toward the end of the game. Brady's now 28-18 when he doesn't throw a touchdown pass, which is kind of crazy that Brady still has a winning record when it comes down to that. But yeah, that under hit pretty easily for you.
It did. It was a really nice job. That's the beauty in where this business, this industry could be heading for, just using what we know from the sports kind of landscape, the media reporters, just knowing what they know, no inside information or anything, but just they've been so immersed in the space, they can apply their knowledge. And I thought it was a really interesting nugget that Uncle Sal relayed to our audience. So really good content there. But Mackenzie, I know you tweeted about this. You were surprised, and as was I, but it was about 6-1 way, half dozen the other in my world, my opinion. But I certainly understand you're questioning why the Patriots kicked that bomb of a field goal instead of going for it and trying to take more time off the clock and also, you know, for a more makeable field goal.
Yeah, there's a lot of different analytical models that took a look at the Patriots' decision there. So basically, 4th and 3, they took a 56-yard field goal in the rain with 55 seconds left. I think you got to go for that personally, because the upside of making that kick is Tom Brady gets the ball back with 45 seconds left and 2 timeouts, needing a field goal to win. I would rather take the chance, try to get those 3 yards, those 5 yards, make the kick a little bit easier for Nick Folk, who barely had the leg to even make it from 56, as we saw. And I don't know. I think you have to go for it there. Our win probability model thought it was the right decision to kick it. I saw some other win probability models, including NFL Next Gen Stats, said that they should have gone for it. So it was a pretty borderline decision, but I always look at it as kind of the feeling test. Like I was rooting for, I did have a teaser on Tampa Bay, now I think about it, but so I was rooting for Tampa Bay in that game. So I wanted them to win. And as somebody rooting for Tampa Bay, I was hoping that they would kick the field goal because I wanted Brady to get the ball back or have Folk miss the kick right there. So as somebody,
two ways to win, so to speak, if you're
exactly, yeah.
I will say this. You mentioned that Antonio Brown's drop, whatever you want to call it, two potential chances. One was losing the ball in the lights, and the other one was a pseudo drop. We were all deprived of perhaps the greatest two-point conversion in gambling history with serious ATS drama, because if the Patriots score down one, they go up five, right? And then the two-point conversion, the spread all week was 6.5, 7. So it, and then you mentioned the handle. All these books needed the Pats plus 7 or plus 6.5 for their lungs. So it would have been certainly a super dramatic ending, but we weren't able to get that. We just got the field goal. So they just had to sweat a little bit on the pick six. Maybe the Devin White one. That would have been crazy if he had a linebacker pick six it from like the 10. But
well, the funny thing about that line too is that we talked all week on Daily Wager. We had quotes from people at Caesars. They thought the line might move to 7.5, but it actually moved back down to 6.5 because it looked like on game day and the day before, a lot of big money started coming in on New England. In fact, the final spread splits, 93% of the tickets were on the Bucs, so everybody was on Tampa Bay, but only 61% of the money. I know they took a $500,000 bet in the Patriots plus 7. So a lot of the big money bets came in closer to game time on the Patriots. So it wasn't quite as one-sided as it looked like it would be early in the week. Like I said, that line closed 6.5, even though it was 7 for a lot of the week. But that would have been a two-point conversion to swing many hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, pick'em leagues, everything. I mean, just so much, because it's the culmination, the parlays. Obviously, the two-point conversion wouldn't have impacted teasers and money line parlays, but still, it's just huge stuff. And then obviously Patriots would have had a chance to go back and maybe force overtime or go for two themselves, which would have affected so much. So nonetheless, we got an exciting game. It was great. I just could have done without the Steve Belichick cutaways on my big screen in HD. Did not need the full mullet, the tongue wagging and all that. That was,
we got some good
little
gifts
much
out of it though.
Yeah.
We got some good gifts out of it.
But I applaud NBC for calling the audible after they did it enough in like the third quarter, and they said, all right, enough's enough. Let's move on. Why don't you and I move on as well? There were a lot of crazy endings. I mean, it's an NFL Sunday. I think the one thing is the teasers did deliver, right? And in the past few weeks, we haven't really needed sort of the teasers, the point spread. It's a ridiculously high percentage, and if you have it, please let me know. But the team that wins the game has been covering, right? It's been a very few and far between teams that won but did not cover. Obviously, we're only talking about favorites because if the underdog wins, right, they're automatically covering. But there's only been a few that won but didn't cover inside the number, right? Like that's the big, why use teasers and all that. So that's been interesting, and we saw a few cases of that. Thursday night, case in point, right? The Bengals won but did not cover, but Chiefs covered. The popular teasers got there. And the Patriots did not. Excuse me, the Bucs did not. They needed the teaser, the reducing. But the Packers got there. That was a popular teaser as well. Seahawks. Some people, tease that up as well. But that's about it. But your Jets get the outright. That was a little bit of a survivor shakeup.
Yeah, that was an ESPN Eliminator Challenge. 24% of the people had Tennessee, so it was the second most popular pick on Survivor, which I personally didn't agree with. Now, yes, I am a Jets fan, so maybe there's a little bit of bias involved, but I don't like Tennessee laying points on the road there because without Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, to me, the Jets could have just loaded up and tried to stop Derrick Henry. Now, that's easier said than done, but they don't have to rely on the passing game, which is what helps open up the run game for Tennessee. And the other thing with Tennessee is when you play in that division, which is clearly the worst in football, they have two games against the Texans. They have two games against the Jaguars. There's no reason to use the Titans on the road, especially when you have the biggest favorite all season in Buffalo, which we'll get to in a little bit. But it was a dicey week for teasers. Out of the four most popular picks, the Titans lost outright. The Saints lost outright. They were one of the teams that I put in my article, so I dodged the bullet with the Titans, but the Saints did get me for once. That's my first loss in my Eliminator column. But those were two of the four most popular picks. And the Bengals almost lost on Thursday night. The only team out of the most popular picks this week to win was Buffalo, which looked like a free square on paper, and that's how it ended up being for Buffalo this week.
No, it really was. 40-0, just a complete beatdown, little warm-up before the Bills go to Arrowhead and play the Kansas City Chiefs in what could be a huge game for down the road in terms of playoff seeding. Buffalo certainly looks like they've taken a step forward this season. But they did lose the Steelers at home, so we're not really sure. They've just beaten up on bad teams the last couple of weeks. I guess before we get into a few fun facts ATS-wise, who do you think has improved their power rating the most this week? I think the Cowboys really kind of starting to shine. Not many people believed in their defense, including myself, even after playing pretty impressively for a couple of weeks. I was like, shelf life on this, circumstantial, right? The Chargers scored two touchdowns that were nullified by penalties, so that score is a little misleading. But I think the Cowboys might be legit. My under 9.5 is on life support here, although they do have a tough road schedule. That was the one that got me sort of on that under. They have 6 really tough games outside the division on the road, and you know, one of them they got the win. That was in LA against the Chargers. But in general, I think the Cowboys look pretty polished.
Yeah, you mentioned the Cowboys. I don't know if they're the team that's going to increase the most this week, just because they're favored by, you know, 4.5-ish. They won by 8. But, you know, Dallas, they're the only team that's 4-0 against the spread this year. And last year, if you remember Dallas at the start of the year, Dallas last year, they started 0-8 against the spread to start last year. So a big difference between the start for the Cowboys this year and last year. But to your question, I think the team that probably improves their power rating the most is the Cardinals.
Cardinals going yeah, that the was the other team.
Blowing out the Rams on the road. I mean, Kyler Murray, his MVP case takes another step forward this week. 268 yards, 2 touchdowns through the air, 39 rushing yards. Big road win there, and they're 4-0. And right now we are guaranteed to have either the Cardinals or the Raiders be the last undefeated team in the NFL this year. And I don't know if you know what their odds were entering the year to be the last undefeated team, but I'll tell you them right now. The Cardinals were 50-1. And the Raiders were 100-1. So a long shot this year is going to be the last undefeated team.
It's pretty nuts that the Raiders were, what did they need? They had no timeouts in the opening night, 37 seconds left or something like that. And they went down the field and kicked that bomb field goal to force overtime. I mean, just crazy, let alone down 14-0 to the Dolphins in their next home game. But the Cardinals, undefeated ATS is what as well, right? They're 4-0.
No, the Cardinals, they lost one of their games. They, what was it? The
Vikings, excuse me.
Yeah, the Vikings yeah, game. I think the Vikings, yeah, they're a favorite and they didn't cover. But they are 4-0 outright, but they're 3-1 against the spread this year.
No, look, I wrote, you know, I do a futures column every Tuesday morning, so go check it out for those listening on ESPN.com, the chalk section. And I said, look, you might have missed the boat on Kyler Murray. Sure, 25-1, there's value. 6-1, there's not. Now it's going to be less than that. I just think it's so correlated to your team success and where you are in the playoff seeding. Maybe I'm not buying the Cardinals even now. I don't think they're going to be a 1 or a 2 seed, but we've certainly seen outliers. We saw Devontae Smith win the Heisman. We saw Russell Westbrook on a 6 seed win the NBA MVP. So maybe this is a year, even if the Cardinals don't, you know, finish 13-4 or whatever it is and are like a 4 or 5 seed, he can still win MVP because he is so dynamic. So I wouldn't poo-poo it. I just wouldn't be banking on it right now if you're late to the party on those MVP odds. I think you've missed the boat. Kind of wait and see. But they've been certainly impressive. Today's win may have caught the Rams a little flat, but no, they took it to them and they smacked them in the mouth. So well done there. I thought the Washington and Atlanta game was epic ending. Just so exciting on that front. The Steelers played a little bit harder than I thought, but they still stink. I think they're the worst team in that division. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, their record is 1-3. They're 2 games back. I mean, the Bengals, everybody thought they'd be the worst team, but the Bengals defense looks a lot better than it did entering the year. And Joe Burrow's taking a step forward, and Ben Roethlisberger is clearly taking a step backwards. Like he just refuses to throw the ball down the field. It's all just check down, check down, check down. And if their defense isn't going to play lights out, it's going to be hard for them to win a lot of games.
The Ravens really impressed me. I just doubted how much they'd have in the tank going into Denver, just having these epic finishes, right? The Justin Tucker field goal a week ago, then the home game on Sunday night against the Chiefs. A lot of emotion there. And then the comeback by the Raiders to force overtime and going to OT on the road to open the season on Monday night. I just wasn't sure in the altitude, but Denver scored early to go up 7-0. And then the Ravens kind of reached another gear. Obviously, Teddy Bridgewater left the game. And then it was lights out for Denver with Drew Luck, who I think stinks. But either way, Ravens dominated that game, and Lamar Jackson made some key plays, although his accuracy is still off a little bit. A little reality check for Denver, but Baltimore back in the mix at 3-1.
Yeah, their second career 300-yard passing game for Lamar Jackson. I was on Baltimore in that game just because I thought Baltimore was a little bit undervalued after some of their weaker performances, almost losing to Detroit. But I thought they should have blown out Detroit. Like Marquise Brown dropped a couple long passes that would have put that game a lot more out of reach. And I thought Denver was a little bit overvalued because their first three games, they played against three of the worst teams in the NFL.
Total.
And while they've been beating those teams, they've been taking on a lot of injuries on both the offensive side and the defensive side of the ball. So I don't know if Denver was quite the even though Denver's power rankings increased, I think the injuries kind of canceled some of that out. And we saw that today. And then obviously, like you mentioned, the other injury with Teddy Bridgewater. Now, that line, I believe, is up for next week. So clearly the odds makers don't think that there's that much of a difference between Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater. They play at Pittsburgh next week. That game's a pick'em right now.
Oh, God,
so the fact that line's up in general kind of tells me that the odds makers don't see a big difference between Bridgewater and Drew Lock.
Hey, the Chiefs finally got a one win in cover. So they're now 3-12 in their last 15 games ATS. But Patrick Mahomes, 5 touchdowns, 3 of which went to the Cheetah Tyreek Hill. They win by a dozen in Philly. Nice win. They're back home next week, as I mentioned, get the Bills on Sunday night. Mahomes has entered the chat on the MVP discussion. Good to see him back in the swing. I almost doubled up on the 8-1, but just couldn't do it. I have enough at 550, so we have enough of a rooting interest there. What can you tell us in terms of just a macro sense? You got the Giants outright. You mentioned that game. Browns in a slugfest. Really poor decision, I thought, by Stefanski and some play calling down the stretch, but the defense saved him from a lot of critique and ridicule. And that really, we covered him in the Seahawks Niners. So Jimmy G gets hurt. Trey Lance obviously has room to grow. You saw some flashes here and there, some of the speed, but that offense is just kind of herky-jerky. I liked Seattle going into the weekend. I was kind of heavy on them. It's Niners just like guys aren't open and their defense isn't as dominant as it was 2 years ago in the Super Bowl run. So it was a big win by the Seahawks, who completely were outplayed in the first half, hung around, and then the second half made their move, obviously, with the quarterback change as well for San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Shanahan as a favorite has not been good in his career. We like to think of Shanahan as a great coach, and I do think he is a great coach, but his record as an underdog is way better than his record as a favorite. He is 8-19-2 ATS as a favorite and 3-14-2 ATS as a home favorite as the 49ers head coach. So another time they failed to cover as a favorite this week, failed to even get the win outright. Cardinals and Niners will play each other next week. So that's two of the teams that we just talked about as one increasing their stock, one stock going the other way. The look ahead line on that was 2.5. That's all the way up to 4 with the Cardinals favored against Trey Lance. Cause Garoppolo said he's likely going to be out for a couple of weeks. So it looks like Trey Lance will make his first career start in that one. We've seen rookie quarterbacks
struggle. Keep in mind to our bettors, sorry to interrupt, but just our bettors, remember, like when a rookie quarterback or any backup quarterback gets inserted mid game, the game plan is completely different, especially when you're a different style QB. Much different at the next week. He'll be much more comfortable. He'll get all the reps with QB1 and the ones. He'll be much more comfortable. Now, what that means, I don't know, but just don't think you're going to see this deer in headlights version that you saw today.
And Shanahan even mentioned that after the game. He said that the game plan was built for Jimmy Garoppolo, exactly, which you would expect because Garoppolo was supposed to be the quarterback. So with a week prepare for that game, they should get some in some more RPOs, some more quarterback running plays, some more plays that accentuate Trey Lance's strength. So I'm curious to see how Lance looks. We've seen rookie quarterbacks struggle this year, but Mac Jones got the cover on Sunday Night Football. Zach Wilson got the outright win. Justin Fields and the Bears covered. That was another game that we talk about the one-sided action. The Lions were one of the most one-sided. That was one of the most the biggest splits of the week. Ended up 79% of the Lions, but for most of the week, like you talk to a lot of odds makers, like a lot of places couldn't find people to bet on the Bears, though some big money on the Bears came in closer to game time and they got the cover there.
That was really surprising. Just a random game, and Bears are a public team, and just have the Lions to get all this money in such an ugly non-primetime game. It was just pretty funny to see it stick out like a sore thumb. Any other big, like last week we talked about the teams that are 0-3 or whatever, 0-2 ATS and getting points at home, all that. Any other macro stuff that we knew going into the weekend, how it all played out?
It was pretty much, it was kind of a standard week. I mean, underdogs were 7-8 against the spread this week. So it'll be the first week this season where underdogs do not have a winning week. They're still 37-26 on the season. Unders were pretty much 50-50, 8-7 right now. The unders were still profitable in the year, 36-27. Road teams went 9-6 ATS. And the thing with road teams also, they're 33-30 straight up this year. So the home field advantage, we have the fans back, but as we've talked about, it's really not making any difference. It'll be the third straight year road teams have a winning record, a record of 500 or better through 4 weeks. Last year, they were 500. In 2019, they're over 500. Like, we hadn't seen a road teams have a winning record through 4 weeks prior to that since 1983. So this has clearly been a change.
The playing field has been leveled. I mean, that's what I wrote about this for Chalk last year when there were no fans. It's like, what's this mean for the point spread, the home field adjustment? And we talked about it earlier on the podcast a couple weeks ago, I believe it was, is that travel is more advanced, the communication between quarterback and head coach with the headsets and technology. And it's just not as pronounced as it once was over the years. Like, playing on the road is just not as much of a hurdle as it once was. That's all.
Yeah. And the other thing I was going to bring up too is, you know, we've talked about the public teams. We brought up the Lions. We brought up Tampa Bay. Neither of them covered. Out of the six teams that had at least 75% of tickets on one side, they went 2-4 against the spread. The Chiefs got the cover. The Packers got the cover. But Tampa Bay, Tennessee, Detroit, and the Saints all failed the cover. And the Saints losing as 7.5-point favorites, that's the biggest upset of the year so far. So the Bills, actually, the Bills-Texans line, that closed at 18.5, which is the most the Bills were favored by since 1992.
Jim Kelly, the Kelly Gunn days.
Oh yeah. I mean, that line that opened at like over 17, it was under 17 for most of the week. And then all of a sudden it shot up closer to game time.
You know, it's funny, this morning I was looking for my best bet and I was like, you know, cause I was leaning teaser the whole way. And then I ended up going Daniel Jones over 26.5 rushing yards. And it got there by half thanks to an overtime run. Never doubt. He had 24 in the first half. So I was on my way, but no, I was looking, I was like, to be honest, like, the Bills are going to crush them. Like, I was like, the Bills are stout defensively enough that they can cover this kind of spread. Like, the last year, I think the Chiefs were favored by around 22 against the Jets, or was that 2 years ago?
I believe that was I don't know off the top of my head. I believe
either way,
the Jets, the Jets have been such massive underdogs so many times over the last couple of years that it's
right.
Hard
but
to
like
keep track.
They covered, but usually you don't want to lay that kind of lumber with a team that's not that solid defensively. But I was telling myself, like, how are they going to go into Buffalo and make this a game? Like, they're not. I mean, the Rams last year with the Jets team that was getting better and finally getting weapons healthy, and then obviously the Jets won outright as a 17.5-point dog. Like, I just felt like that was a Goff game. He just stunk. Like, this was like, anyways, I'm not surprised to see it was 40-0. This was a really bad, like, situation for Houston.
I mean, it's the second
they're
time
awful.
It's the second time in 3 weeks the Bills have won. I mean, they beat the Dolphins 35-0. Now they beat the Texans 40-0. So two shutouts in three games is pretty good for Buffalo. It's the best three-game scoring margin they've ever had. They actually have the best cover margin in the NFL right now at 13.9 points per game, even though they lost outright as a favorite in week one. So
they're good. I'm really looking forward in next week, because last postseason – the Bills look like they needed some work to kind of hang with the Chiefs. We'll see. We'll see what transpired. Now, it's at Arrowhead, so obviously there's an advantage, and obviously the Bills are trying to maybe get it at the Ralph. If they get the one seed this year, they have a leg up, being 3-1, Chiefs 2-2, but obviously an outcome next weekend can change things.
I mean, our football power index already had the Bills as the best team in the NFL even before this week, and their numbers only going to get better after winning 40-0 and shutting down the Texans the way they did. The look-ahead line for the Bills-Chiefs game, that was +4 with the Chiefs favored. It was obvious in Arrowhead, but that's come down to 3, and I don't think we're going to see Bills +4 again for the rest of the year. So, yeah, I hope you got that number if you're looking at these look-ahead lines.
Three feels right.
Yeah, 3 feels right. I mean, we talk about home field advantage not beating anything. Like, if we think home field doesn't mean that much, maybe it even should be 2.5.
Maybe. I just feel like the Chiefs are that public of a team. And, I mean, we've seen the pie charts, right, every week. Not that the Bills aren't getting some backing, but the public loves betting on Mahomes and these explosive Chiefs. I remember Murray in one of the first or second year of Mahomes, he goes, yeah, I'm basically going to have to root against Mahomes every weekend for the next 10 years because the public just is – undeterred with this guy.
I mean, early in his career, he was a covering machine, but like you mentioned earlier, 3-12 ATS in his last 15 games, including the playoffs. So lately, those lines might be a little bit inflated, and maybe we're seeing that with next week's game. One other look ahead line that moved a lot, I mentioned the Cardinals 49ers. The other one is Tennessee, Jacksonville, Tennessee, after losing to the Jets, Jaguars compete with the Bengals. That was 7.5 on the opening line. That's now down to 4. And I even saw a 3.5. Like, I think that's a complete overreaction. Now, I mentioned I don't think the Titans are that good, but I think the Jaguars are just a mess right now. After Urban Meyer's comments from last week, I could see Jacksonville, you know, not showing up the way that Urban Meyer wants them to. And if Tennessee,
you're worried about the comments from last week. So that's what you're worried about from last week. And I'm worried about some pictures. But that's just,
yeah. Oh, that's a whole different topic for another day and probably another show.
Well, I'm just saying, like, that could affect some things around the, you know, who knows. What were the comments that you said, just calling out and saying, what were the comments? Am I forgetting something that was that noteworthy?
He just seemed absolutely demoralized and despondent. And you don't normally see coaches act that way after a loss, but he seemed really, really down after that game. Only 4 games in his career. And I mean, I know you can't put a tweet into Urban Meyer's thing, but we already saw the Jaguars basically tweet a "stick with us," on Twitter a couple weeks ago after struggling to start the year. So I think Jacksonville is a mess right now. And if you take any team in the NFL other than Houston, and I have to only lay 3.5 against Jacksonville, I think I'm going to take it until I'm proven wrong.
Anything for Monday night we need to know? I'm leaning Chargers -3, but I've also been wrong on like every Raiders game, although I had the Dolphins last week. Anything that sticks out?
I mean, the Raiders with the overs have been, you know, basically machines since they moved to Vegas. 15-4 to the over since the largest start of last season, the highest percentage in the NFL. Chargers 5-15-1 ATS is a home favorite since 2018. So Chargers laying points has usually been a problem. Derek Carr 6-1 against the spread on a Monday Night Football, including week one. So a couple little trends there. I liked the Raiders when it was 3.5 at 3. I don't think it's, I don't really have a strong lean there, but at 3.5, I liked Las Vegas. I don't think, I mean, we talked about the home field advantage. Like, this is going to be a Raiders home game. There's going to be more Raiders fans than Chargers there. So this,
yeah, I mean, it's former Raider town, right? San Diego was the rival.
Absolutely. I think there's more Raiders fans in Los Angeles than Chargers fans.
I would agree with that.
We'll see how Justin Herbert does to try to get more fans on their side.
A real quick note in college, Bryce Young now the sole favorite to win the Heisman, +0.25. Matt Corral only drops to +230, then it's double digits after that. If I told you you could have Bama or Georgia to win it all, and I would take the field, would you take it?
Oh, man. I'm still not sold on Georgia's offense. Alabama's got a couple questions there, but it's so hard to go against either of those teams. And nobody else is really standing out as that third option.
Yeah, I would. Because even a team like Iowa, we've seen these teams make runs, and then they don't even score in the college football playoff. Georgia and Bama look like a cut above, particularly Georgia. To be honest, I think Georgia's the best team in the country right now. Just defensively, they're
not taking Georgia at 10-1 is my biggest regret of the season. I was looking at that 10-1 number. I almost took it and I opted not to. I mean, Ohio State, Oklahoma, I mean, Michigan, I was looking at Michigan's numbers entering last week and I regret not taking them. I mean, I don't think they're going to win the title, but you know, you could get them at 10-1 to win the Big Ten last week. And, you know, they'll have to beat Ohio State for that to happen. But, Michigan's looking a lot better than a lot of people thought.
Yeah, I think conference odds, like I grabbed NC State before the Clemson game at 50-1 to win the ACC. I'm not taking college football futures. I mean, they got to get there and then win 2 games as double-digit dogs, some of these teams, whether it's Penn State, whether it's Iowa, I don't know, Oregon, if the committee looks past some of the maybe the bogus PI, things like that. Even Notre Dame. Notre Dame's 100-1 right now. Now, obviously, they lost, but Cincinnati's not going to win 2 games in the playoff. They're 25-1. I'll give someone 50-1. They're not winning 2 games.
What's a rolling parlay? If you have an open parlay on Cincinnati to win 2 playoff games, you might even get close to 25-1.
Yeah, in starting it there, not even the rest of the regular season, right? Now, of course, things could break a certain way. Maybe Alabama's the 1 seed and Georgia's the 4 seed if Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC title game. And then you only have to beat one of them as a big dog, and then it's a little different, right? Maybe you catch, I don't know, Ohio State in the semis, and that's more beatable for Cincinnati. Just from the eye test through 1 month of the season. I mean, we're obviously just spitballing here, but it's crazy because I've been on some ridiculous tickets. I had a Notre Dame ticket last year, and there was nothing I could do besides hope that an in-game, maybe at halftime, they're tied or beating Clemson and then play out of it that way. But it's really tough with the 4-team playoff now and these long shots and then this huge gap with the two, you know, this year. I can't remember a 2-horse race like this with Bama and Georgia, and then a big drop off after that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's happened recently with some Bama and Clemson times. Oh, Ohio State often sneaks in there as the clear third team. But yeah, I mean, in college football, pretty much every year, you got two or three teams that are clear cut above everybody else, and fading them is always very difficult.
Very sad that the Red Sox came back and won, because my Blue Jays 28-1 to win the pennant is dead. So Yankees and Red Sox do advance, and they are your wild card teams. Anything we need to know about the baseball playoffs that let the people know before this week?
Yeah, so the Dodgers, last I checked, they were -213, which in the MLB wildcard game, which I believe goes back to 2012, they would be the second largest favorites in that game behind the Yankees in 2017 against the Twins. Yankees won that game. Dodgers are still favored to win it all, even though they're in a one-off coin flip game. So they are the +350, I believe, last I checked. So that's the shortest odds for a wildcard team entering the playoffs since in the wildcard era. And they're the third wildcard team to be favored to win the World Series entering the playoffs, along with the 04 Red Sox, which were co-favorites, and the 07 Yankees. So some interesting things there.
I didn't realize two other teams were also. I thought this was a special circumstance.
Well, that was also before they had to play the 04 and the 07. That's before the one-off wildcard games. That the coin flip wildcard game changes everything when it comes to these odds, though. Clearly not with this Dodgers team, even though they can't even win their division with the Giants cashing their long tickets. 40-1 entering the year, the Giants to win that division. That's the longest odds by an eventual division winner since at least 2008, which is as far back as we have data. And they went 32.5 games over their win total. Win total 74.5, 107 wins. Since the 94-95 strike, the only team that's gotten even 25 games over its win total was the 01 Mariners, which 81.5 wins. And of course, they won 116 that year. So the Giants are one of the biggest gambling surprises we've seen in recent history in baseball.
Well, Scherzer's on the bump. As a Dodger fan, that's all I could have wanted for the pitching to line up that way. I love Bueller. Obviously Kershaw's hurt, but Scherzer's the guy I wanted. He's been lights out except for his last two outings, Coors Field and then the regular season one. But I have confidence in him for sure, and he'll go against Wainwright, who's been, throwback season for him. So Cardinals red hot coming into the playoffs, and Dodgers will be a fun one. That's on Wednesday, Yankees and Red Sox on Tuesday. The rest of the Daily Wager crew will have a preview of that Monday and Tuesday when we get right back to our weekday 10-minute podcast.
A couple other quick trends before I get out of here. The Rams have gone over the total in all four games this year. The Steelers, Patriots, and Broncos have gone under the total in all four games. The Chargers are also 3-0 to the under, so that clashes with that Raiders trend I mentioned earlier about their games going over. The Saints, we mentioned earlier, them losing outright. The underdog has now won outright in all four Saints games this year, and all four Saints games have been at least 10 points off the closing line. So the odds makers still can't figure out the Saints. We talked about that last week. The underdog's also won outright in all three Chargers games this year, so that's another trend for tomorrow night's game. And one other thing that interested me, too, is that the Dolphins have the worst average cover margin in the NFL this year, and last year they had the second best in the NFL. So we've been backing the Dolphins with Brian Flores after their slow start there, but that seems to be coming to a crashing halt, whether it's Jacoby Brissett or Tua Tagovailoa quarterback. So just a couple notes to go, and thanks for having me on, Doug.
Yeah, of course, man. It's fun to break it all down. It's like analytics, right? Obviously, only three or four games into the season, you're going to have these 4-0 and 0-4, but it's just interesting, like you said, in relation to the point spread. Really fascinating. But yeah, Cowboys undefeated ATS last year started 0-8. That's my favorite stat from the pod so far. So it was a memorable night. Obviously, unusual circumstance for Brady after two decades with the Patriots to be back in Foxborough on the opposite sideline. Fun, fun gambling night as well. We missed the two-point conversion opportunity. We still got a lot of other fun ATS outcomes, and we'll see you back or hear you back here throughout the week.